You're listening to the Fat Dude Digs Flicks Movie Podcast Network.
I guess I really don't know what Christmas is all about.
Merry Christmas from Fat Dude Digs Flicks, and here's the naughtiness. Is up, everybody. This is Andy, the resident fat dude of Fat Dude Digs Flicks, coming to you recorded from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and it is time for an all-new episode of Let's Talk About. If this is your first time listening to Let's Talk About, thank you for joining us. I hope you have a good time. Let's Talk About is a chat show where I'm joined by a guest. We talk about their life, their loves, and a movie that has had an impact on them. We are right in the middle of the naughty list, which is a new tradition around here, where I have guests on that love a movie that I don't particularly care for, and it's not a moment for me to argue with them. It's more a moment to just be like, oh, why do you guys like this movie? Oh, that's great. I don't like it.
And then Andy goes off and he just angry cries. He's like, what did I have to watch that movie again?
Why? No, but then in some instances, as is the case with a recent episode, a guest on today's show, whose wife joined me for a conversation a couple weeks ago, sometimes my opinions shockingly change. And then I am okay with the Twilight movies. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. But spoiler alert, that's not the case here. I am joined on today's show. This is kind of like what I like to call a handicap match. This is a 3-on-1 situation here, and I think it fits the movie because we are talking about the 2000 wrestling epic Ready to Rumble, and I am joined by my guests, the trio of terror, Mr. Casey Kelderman, Charlie Eccles, and Anthony Hokeman. Anthony, Charlie, Casey, how you guys doing? And no, I'm not going to say anything about this movie yet. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm glad to hear it. Casey, Charlie, how you guys doing?
Andy, I hope you're prepared to be varnished on this episode with this 3-on-1 attack.
It's going to be a mess. It's just a mess.
I was going to say, the last time I saw a 3-on-1 handicap match, somehow CM Punk beat the entire Wyatt family. So, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think shortly thereafter he got pissed off and left, and now he's home. So, this is awesome.
He's home. This is his home.
I'm just happy that we have a platform to talk about both movies and wrestling, because we haven't, our group chat is not enough for that. So
this is going to be the most rambunctious episode I have probably had, because I don't know. You guys have all been guests on the show before. So I don't need to hear your life stories this time.
Fuck you. I don't want to hear it. Screw Christmas.
Listen, I don't want to hear it. I don't care. You guys like a bad movie. Why are we even here? No. It's much more pleasant than that. I've got stuff I want to talk about before we dive into the movie, but I do want to say, so that there's no confusion whatsoever, Ready to Rumble did not improve. and I am interested to hear, it's a silly movie, so I can understand why, maybe somebody like Casey, who was a child when it came out, would love it. But grown ass adults, we gotta talk about this. But that's for later. For now, guys, this is the Christmas season. It's a very nice time to enjoy time with your friends and family. So I guess I'm kind of curious, and I'll start with you, Anthony. What are some fun, like, Christmas traditions that you may have or things you enjoy doing with the family? Like, how do you celebrate the Christmas season?
Yeah, I guess we don't really have a whole lot of traditions on my side. I don't get weird, but a lot of Christmas stuff in my family is done with my stepdad's family, who I'm not like on super great terms with. We spend a lot of time with my wife's family usually, and that always kind of looks different every year. So, we do usually try to do like a small little friends and family Christmas party. We've done that the last couple of years. And that's really, really kind of become our tradition. Over the last couple of years. But I've never been a big Christmas guy, which I feel like I'm not like a Scrooge or anything. Like, it's right. More ambivalence than hatred.
Yeah. And I think that's all the more reason to do a podcast like this, Anthony, because then you can, you know, talk shit during the holidays, which is an okay thing. It's an okay thing. I did want to say that I am very sorry that I missed your Christmas party. 9 o'clock PM hit and I logged into Facebook and I was like, oh my God, that was today. So I'm terrible and I'm sorry. In my defense, totally I had some car problems last week, which kind of left me without a vehicle. So my whole brain was dealing with the car. But I did have it back by Saturday night. So I should have been there. I'm so sorry.
Totally fine. There's always next year.
And I will be there.
I will say, I guess over the, I've never been a big Christmas music guy. But about 3 years ago, I did make a playlist of my favorite Christmas songs, which I always share every year. And it's a lot of like non-traditional stuff. So, we have a pretty hard and fast rule in our house that was made by me that we don't decorate or listen to Christmas music or watch Christmas movies until after Pearl Harbor Day. I think that's the perfect, for me, window is Pearl Harbor Day to Christmas. Anything before that is lunacy.
Yeah. And I think that kind of like celebrates just how solemn that day is. So it's good to kind of, you know, never forget.
Yes, exactly. I always like to say that if you decorate or listen to Christmas music before, then you hate the troops.
Yeah. Yeah, big time. Big time. I love it. We're making friends this episode. That's what we aim to do on this show. No,
I don't know, man. I just found out I hate the troops. So.
Charlie, since you chimed in, how about you? Any fun Christmas stuff in the Eccles family? What are you? Are you kind of like celebrating with the daughter now? Is that something that she enjoys the lights and stuff?
We're kind of finding our own Christmas traditions now, which is really cool. Prior to that, we spent a lot of time with my side of the family. The way when Lori and I, my wife, when we first met, we found out that her family is really, really into Thanksgiving. And my family is really, really into Christmas. So we've always split it up that way. We'll go and visit my side of the family later this month. But now that I have a kid, it's kind of fun to just now like presents are going under the tree and she's really interested in it. But we're also, I'm a little bit OCD because I've always had a way that I've decorated my Christmas tree and I'm really proud of it and probably more proud than I should be, you know, but no more proud than your average Macy's employee, you know?
Yeah.
So this is this year having a 2-year-old, I'm finding out that it's not smart to have some kind of, you know, compulsionary mental illness and have a 2-year-old. So it's been a lot of fun to find Christmas ornaments just around.
Yeah,
you know, and the it under the couch, in the garbage, mm-hmm. under the fridge, because she can't quite open the fridge, just thrown at the dog. That's a lot of fun. We've also reached an age where my daughter's a sociopath. So this is... We're having a lot of fun this holiday season. So
this is a terrifying Christmas situation.
It really is. I fear for myself and my life on a daily basis now.
I was going to say, though, Charlie, honestly, like, this whole situation, it basically sounds the same. Having a two-year-old at Christmas time is basically the same as having a cat at Christmas time.
You it's know, real similar. Yeah.
Knocking the ornaments off the tree, hitting the dog with the ornaments, mm-hmm. and worried about your life because things could go poorly. So, yeah.
Sometimes she sneaks into the bathroom and just pulls on the toilet paper and... You know, you can't put the toilet paper back on the roll. That's no different than your average house cat, I guess.
Exactly.
The only difference is, you know, my cat. Wow, we actually went there. My child, whom I love dearly, will She'll now yell at me for attempting to put the toilet paper back on the roll. So that just seems, you know, it's reasonable. It's just I just have to remember that she's right. She's correct in this situation, and I should bow down to her whims. Merry Christmas.
That's the meaning of Christmas right there.
We're having a blast. We just had like a really like she's sick right now, so she was just very much a toddler tonight. We're very lucky to have the child that we have. She's an amazing kid. She's super, super sweet to everybody on it. Normally tonight was just not her best night. So
yeah, it happens. I was gonna say, listen, you always, anytime you're on here, you gush about your child. So it's kind of nice to hear you be like, listen, sometimes this child's a holy terror. So, and I think at Christmas time, what better season than that?
It's really
true. Also, I want to let you know, too, we don't have, and this, you know, Anthony, maybe you'll appreciate this, we don't have our Christmas tree up yet. Not because of, you know, an observance of Pearl Harbor Day, but because we just haven't gotten around to it yet. But what that means is that there is
You hate no, the troops.
It does. I mean, basically, I hate the troops. Right.
Only if you put it up before Pearl Harbor Day. You're safe from hating the troops at this
point. Oh, that's the rule.
Yeah. Afterwards, it's perpetual USA, USA. It's like I am my own tribute to the troops. Just, you know, in living, breathing form. No. What I was going to say was
I do salute you whenever I see you. So,
yeah, as well you should. So because I don't have the tree up, that of course means that there is no Andre the Giant ornament up yet. However, I do have to say that this year, a very nice star was purchased. So Andre will no longer, be atop the tree.
Until I
wake up in the middle of the night and I like sneak in there and I clip him to the top of the star. That's totally what's going to happen. It just hasn't happened yet because the tree isn't up, but Andre is still going to be on the star every morning.
Oh, I miss having that Andre statue around. That was a good Christmas for me.
Yeah, it's a great little keepsake. It makes me want to buy every Andre the Giant action figure that I can. However, like those collector's issue like WWE figures, I need to take out like a mortgage or something to be able to afford.
You're talking the ones that were made by the guys who made like the Spawn action figures, right?
Yeah,
like, yeah, those are badass. But man, yeah, I've seen those in person. They're also they weigh a ton. Like you'll be able to put a dip in a mattress with that friggin' thing.
So basically, I'm talking that I just need the WWE Hall of Fame Andre the Giant statue. Put that in my house. That's what I want.
Yeah,
save me. That way, I can have all of those wrestling figures just in one statuesque form.
Yes.
Casey, the question is the same to you. What's your Christmas season like? Have you guys been doing anything fun? Is there anything that you look forward to doing? How do you Christmas?
Because this is a wrestling themed episode, I'm only going to answer your questions with wrestling themed answers. So therefore, all I do is watch terrible Christmases gone by from WCW and WWF gone by, including that time known terrible person Alberto Del Rio tried to kill Santa Claus on live television. Thankfully, he got his comeuppance on that. But I mean, that's the point. We should have known Alberto was a terrible human being. He tried to kill Santa Claus on live television.
Yeah, it was definitely not the alleged spousal abuse prior.
No, that was only alleged. He actually tried to kill Santa Claus on TV. There was proof of this, Charlie.
The spousal abuse, though unwarranted, probably just a rumor.
We should probably state that on the internet, just a rumor. But the Santa Claus thing, no, he definitely tried to
allegedly.
Speaking of Paige, we didn't speak of her, but I'm going to. Did you know WWE has like three different like terrible straight to video Christmas movies?
I know of one.
And they're awful. Okay. They made Jingle All the Way 2, starring Larry the Cable Guy. Just skip that. Santino's in that. But that's nothing. Mike the Miz Mizanin is in two of them.
Oh, one of them has Paige in it. Yep.
One of them has Paige in it. Santa's Little Helper. And then another one called Christmas Bounty, which I assume is a spinoff to The Marine. I don't know. I assume so, but maybe not.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Are any of them worth watching?
Come on.
No, of course not.
Come on. Come on, Ian.
But you know what movie is worth the watch?
Oh, God.
Ready to Rumble.
Listen, 100%. No, just hold on. I'm not ready to talk about this yet.
I haven't even brought up Santa Claus from WWF yet, Charlie. We can't go on this Christmas-themed wrestling podcast.
Oh, sorry. That was just a teaser.
Can't talk about Santa Claus on it. Do you guys remember Santa Claus?
No,
I do not.
No,
no. So, in the great mind of one Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who thought the gobbledygooker was a great character to introduce around Thanksgiving, he also thought of a evil Santa Claus to introduce, played by the great Balls Mahoney, and he stuck around for like 2 months after Christmas as like a henchman, but he was like an evil Santa Claus.
How did I not know about this?
It's because you don't need to.
But the fact that it was Balls Mahoney feels like something I should know.
Yeah, this is like 1995, 96.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. It's a real thing. Look it up. Santa Claus.
Yeah. With a Z.
I'm reading about it right now.
With an X.
Ridiculous.
X instead of a S.
Okay.
Yeah. What year was this again?
Like 95, 96. So,
peak
new generation right there.
Yeah. In your house, December 17th, 1995 is what I've got here.
So this was right before the Rumble, too. The Rumble where Shawn Michaels went from first and won it.
Yeah. Santa Claus, I don't believe, was in that Royal Rumble.
Oh,
I mean, but damn shame. If he was, there's no way he could have lost. So, you know, if they're trying to tell Shawn Michaels' story, they can't ruin it by putting Santa Claus in there.
I mean, Santa Claus was remarkably over.
Yeah. Big time. Huge pop right when he walks down the aisle.
Yet we all remember the gobbledygooker. So
yeah, I can't believe we never got that holiday themed match between the gobbledygooker and Santa Claus at like
there's still time
or something.
Nope, there is not. Both those men are dead.
Oh well, I stand corrected. I was just about to say,
listen, they can doink the clown it and put somebody just in.
You remember what they did with Razor Ramon and Diesel?
That's right.
When they left, right. Yeah, just make a new fake Gooker and fake Santa.
Glenn Jacobs could play Santa Claus, that's for sure.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I want them to bring Glenn Jacobs back as Diesel in the Rumble this year. I'm going to this year's Royal Rumble, and nothing would make me happier than to see Glenn Jacobs come out to
as long as Luke Gallows comes out as Fake Kane after that, I think we got something cooking.
Has Kane been inducted into the Hall of Fame yet? Has that happened, or is that
no?
I don't believe so.
Not yet. Okay. No.
Listen, it is going to happen. I do hope that his video package includes Isaac Yankum, and the fake Diesel. I think his career is not the induction is not complete without the other terrible characters that he.
I did just watch. I've been trying to watch all of the prior Royal Rumbles, and I think I've only watched the 97 Rumble maybe once or twice prior to this, but I watched the 97 Rumble one of these prior weekends, and it has both Fake Diesel and Fake Razor in it, and Fake Razor gets in the ring and is immediately out, like is gone like within seconds. Fake Diesel, however, Glenn Jacobs is in that match for a respectable amount of time, and and if they add that amount of time to his total amount of time been in a Royal Rumble, I think his record will never be broken.
Yeah. Was he ever in a Rumble as Isaac Yankum?
Yes. Which one was it? I want to say
the year before, right?
Yeah, 96. Because that was the year I had a tape, like a VHS tape that somebody had given me, and they had the prior Raw and the 96 Rumble on it. And on the prior Raw, it was Isaac Yankum versus The Undertaker on just a throwaway Raw.
Yeah.
But Undertaker they were building Undertaker up to face Bret Hart at the Rumble for the title. And Isaac Yankum was doing this whole thing with Jerry Lawler, where he was semi Jerry Lawler's muscle, and they were trying to introduce the character, and it just wasn't taken off. But yeah, he was in the Rumble as three different characters in this case. Yeah, you're correct.
Man, wow.
It's almost like random gimmicks that are aligned with a king don't work. Hello, Ready to Rumble. We'll talk about that later.
Much better transition. I like that.
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask a question when you brought that up, but now I've forgotten what the question was. So my brain is fun. I did want to ask you, though, Anthony. So, you know, knowing Charlie and Casey for as long as I have, I know that these two gentlemen are borderline obsessed with professional wrestling, as am I. But Anthony, what's kind of your history with professional wrestling? I assume because you liked this movie at one time, there was a connection to the world of professional wrestling. So what's kind of your history with that incredible sport?
So I guess starting from the beginning, I was always like, I grew up remembering being really intrigued by wrestling with very, very little exposure to it. I of course knew who Hulk Hogan was, and my local video store, The Video Vendor, which I have shouted out on my previous episode, had the NES WWF King of the Ring video game, which I think came out in like 92 or 93. Nice. And I remember renting that game and playing it a lot, and so being like aware of The Undertaker because of that game, and Bam Bam Bigelow I learned about because of that game, and a few other guys. And that was really my only exposure for a long time, until my friend Carter got WCW versus NWO World Tour for Nintendo 64.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And I got really into that. We played a lot of WCW versus NWO World Tour. And that must have been in like the spring of 98 that we were playing that a lot. Because I specifically remember it was late July of 98 that I tuned into TNT for the first time and watched Monday Nitro and was like, hell yeah, this rules. excuse me. I was a big WCW guy from that summer of 98 until probably around early 1999 when I started jumping back and forth between USA and TNT and watching Raw and Nitro. And I'm pretty sure based on what I remember and watching a lot of old wrestling videos on YouTube, around mid 99 must have been around the time that I was like, okay, I'm done with WCW, or for sure by early 2000. And was a WWF guy until around the time, it's hard for me to remember exactly, but it was around the time that wrestling stopped being cool. And yeah. I didn't have any like friends to talk to about it anymore. And I thought that it was before the WCW invasion, but I also feel like I remember the DDP storyline where he was like obsessed with the Undertaker's wife or whatever, which I think was 2002. So it had to have been somewhere in there for sure before 2003 that I had stopped watching, but it was something that because it was such a big part of my life for so long, it always was like, there I was always referencing it, and but I was away, and I think that around 2014 I subscribed to the Squared Circle subreddit just because of how much it was like continuously coming up in my life again. And in 2015 Sting came back for WrestleMania. And that was around the time that, like, shortly before that, WWE Network had launched. And so I was like, oh, I'll just do the free month, watch WrestleMania, and be done with it. And I have had a WWE Network and or Peacock subscription ever since. I'm still, like, I'm a relatively casual fan. Like, I watch the pay-per-views. I don't watch a lot of the week-to-week stuff. I try to keep up with what's going on. I've watched a little AEW. I don't know a lot of what's going on over there, just mostly because I don't have a cable package and I have no easy way to watch it week to week. And then their pay-per-views aren't free for $5 a month with a different subscription. So
they cost quite a bit more than that.
So it's I'm not like a fanboy or anything. I'm all about, you know, whatever, but I have so much history with WWE, and it's so much easier to be and cheaper to be exposed to it. So I'm more of a following them now. So that's the very long version with my history with pro wrestling.
That's actually great. How I met Anthony in the first place was through pro wrestling. So you came with D'Lo to a show, right?
Yes. Yeah. In 2016, it must have been, because that was when we were living together. Yep.
Yeah. 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 And then I know D'Lo came with me to a show prior, I want to say. And then eventually he and I just became buddies, and I had encouraged him to go do the camp. And now he's doing some cool stuff right now, too. So,
yeah, he's doing great. Awesome. I wish that I made it to that more often. My wife has no interest in going, and I hate going to things alone, so I'm very bad about attending those shows, but I wish I went more because I always have fun.
Maybe that's the way that I go too, Anthony, is that if I'm, you know, because I sometimes it's like usually on a Sunday, and I'm kind of in that Sunday scaries where I'm like, I don't want to go back to work. I just want to sit around my house and not do anything. But then it's like, oh, but there's this independent wrestling that'd be fun to watch. So maybe when events start up again, we'll have to see what we can come up with so that we can go watch these guys throw each other around for a little bit. It was funny too, because you said that you don't really know what's going on in AEW. I don't think AEW really knows what's going on in AEW. I think it's a bit of a mess.
It's kind of a shit show over there right now,
but it is kind of fun that, you know, we're covering this movie at a period when wrestling is starting to, you know, not necessarily starting to, but kind of like finding a pop culture resurgence again, like in a way where the people that really liked it at one point are starting to kind of make their way back to it. I just think it's kind of fun to watch how things kind of cycle around. And I think, you know, a lot of that is that people wanted something to change with the way that the product was being put out there. And I think now that there are people kind of running the show who, I guess, kind of operate it with a good sense of perspective. I don't know, maybe I'm talking out of my ass here, but I like the direction that the product is going, especially in WWE, in AEW. There's a lot of potential there, but they're just not focusing that potential.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on that, Andy. But here's the, I have my qualms with AEW as a product right now. I also have my qualms with AEW just having worked in wrestling for 7 years. Yeah. And what I will say is that AEW, it right now is just going through some major growing pains. They were this product where they were bringing in a lot of folks, and they're the first real competition to be able to afford a Daniel Bryan, a CM Punk, a Christian Cage, an Adam Copeland Edge, you know, and they're the first ones who could afford these people and put on a separate product. So they can afford to have like marketable talents. And then they've also afforded being able to build new stars in guys like MJF and Darby Allin. And there's a handful of guys that I'm not going to mention here. So I don't want anybody to be offended, but they've been able to do that. Now they kind of got themselves into a situation where CM Punk came back and that became just white hot lightning, and they were going to put everything on his back, and then everything happened the way that it did. So now we have to switch the way that we're presenting the product. And rumor is they're going to go at more of a sports direction, which is awesome, because I think once they can fine tune that a little bit and make it more palatable from that perspective, I think it's going to rock. I think they're going to do awesome. But right now they're putting on, you know, these things like the Continental Classic, which are fine, but it's, they're throwing in, you know, 18 different guys into a tournament that is round robin style, and it has points and everything like that, and it's the whole focus of the show, and it doesn't allow a lot of time for them to really focus on one person and grow it, or focus on a few people and grow them. So I think they're trying to throw a lot of stuff at the dartboard and just see what sticks right now.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
I've been seeing a lot of comparisons, oddly enough, that we're talking about a movie from the year 2000, of people comparing modern AEW to WCW in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. Those people are idiots, because I've been watching some of the WCW from 2000 just to, like, I don't know, have a little context in terms of this movie and
it was so bad.
in terms of what people are talking about. Andy, you and me and Charlie, we talked about the Jeff Jarrett Hulk Hogan situation from Bash at the Beach 2000. And yeah, it's like, can you imagine AEW doing that right now? No, that's just terrible, terrible booking of people who don't know what they're doing. AEW is going through growing pains more so than we've ran out of any ideas that we have. I think they're in a transitional phase right now. I know we're getting real nerdy on wrestling on this, but I love it. The whole Punk thing, and now that he's in WWE again, I think is going to be... Home. He's home. He's back home.
Yeah, now that he's home.
He's there. He's home. He's happy to be there. He's home, but he's not there to make friends. He's there to make money, goddammit.
He's here to make friends.
But AEW, I think, will go through this transition now that Punk's out of the way. They can put that stuff hopefully behind them and just focus on what made AEW in the first place, which was great matches and building up younger people from the indie scene. It's going to be harder now that Papa H is in charge of WWE right now and also has a very similar mindset of let's tell great stories and take the best of the best from the indies in Japan and bring them here and make them superstars. It's going to be a lot harder, but at least now those people who are on the indies or in Japan or wherever have options, like Will Ospreay, where I was like, I still would have rather have seen him go to WWE, but he can now be perhaps the guy in AEW in 2 years as the top person in that promotion. So I think it's, I think wrestling's at its best it's ever been, period, right now in this moment that we're in. I think it's better than the Attitude Era. I think it's better than, I don't know, whatever era you, in, you know, the 80s. I think it's the best it's ever been. Yeah. And not just because of the two big promotions. There's so many different things you can watch, even if you're, I want to watch TNA Impact Wrestling. I want to watch NWA for some reason. I want to watch what Matt Cardona is doing on the indies, or I want to watch New Japan. Like, there's so many different options right now for wrestling fans that's not just what's on cable TV right now.
My favorite thing so far this year has been James Mitchell doing cocaine on NWA TV.
Yeah.
God. That has been my least favorite thing.
I don't know if Papa Pumpkin liked that as much, though.
It's my
Billy Corgan.
Papa Pumpkin.
Big Papa Pumpkin.
Could you imagine a production meeting with that awkward human being? I mean, let's be real here. James, you're just gonna sit at the table. You're gonna sit at this table and pretend to do cocaine. Look, come on.
We're trying to get a deal with CW. They're gonna love it.
Cocaine use. That's how we get the kids. That's the way to rope them in.
They lost a time slot on the CW. Their time slot that was given to them was midnight on a Thursday. And that's how poorly they are planning their crap right now.
That's rough. That's rough from a business standpoint. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, you're kind of right on that, Casey, because it's like I have such fond feelings of the Attitude Era because that was kind of like, you know, where my fandom kind of hit its peak at some extent, even though through childhood, you know, I was a Hulkamaniac, you know, there was all of that stuff. But there's something about it, though I don't know that it's like invasion of pop culture is as big as it was during the Attitude Era and during, you know, Rock and Wrestling. I do think that as far as creative goes and as far as opportunities go, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's probably in the best position it's ever been in. And it's almost kind of a throwback to like the territories days, because there are so many different indie promotions. It's like everybody has an opportunity to kind of like find their footing somewhere. And then, you know, if they decide to go to whatever the quote unquote big leagues are in WWE, AEW, New Japan, you know, I don't know if I'd throw Impact in there. Impact used to be,
I would,
They just got a new streaming deal too, so they're gonna
throw them in there too.
They apparently offered Will Ospreay. I mean, just reading the rumors, Impact was like legitimately in the running to get Will Ospreay before AEW signed him. So that was cool to see that they were able to drum that up.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's a wide pool to kind of wade in for all of these athletes. So, you know, I agree. I think it's at a really good spot, and it makes it so it's very entertaining. Speaking of entertaining, let's do it. Let's go ahead and just transition right on into our conversation for today. Oh, God. Okay.
Play that trailer.
Second entry on the naughty list is in fact the 2000 wrestling film Ready to Rumble. Here comes that trailer.
Buenos nachos.
Go
Gordy, I didn't know you spoke Spanish. Are you fluent?
No. I feel fine.
Gordy and Sean had dead-end jobs.
People always said I was a dreamer, an idiot, and a waste of life, and I will never amount to anything.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
No luck with the ladies.
Brittany, let's go out again. We'll talk about me and you.
Dude, you're in there.
And no one to look up to.
Freeze!
Your sister shot her first perp today.
That's nice, Gabby.
But at least they had a hero.
Jimmy King is the greatest wrestler of all time.
Wrestling's fake.
Wrestling's not fake!
Down goes Jimmy King!
Oh my God, a four-post massacre! No one can survive this! This isn't even a pay-per-view!
Would that be raw sewage I'm smelling?
They kind of always like that smell.
Now, these dreamers...
Me and my associate, we're on a quest to find King.
It's him!
King King!
...will go to any lengths...
Please, crowd!
Oh, no!
Oh, that was great!
...and do whatever it takes...
We got a friend. He's gonna get you a trainer.
Everybody knows wrestling's fake.
...to put their king...
Do I feel fine?
...back on his throne.
Any match, any time!
The steel cage.
Steel cage wins!
No!
Chicks rock!
Ready to rumble.
The average movie trailer is between 2 and 2.5 minutes long. And that trailer was. That trailer clocked in at a good 2 minutes and 21 seconds. That was the longest 2 minutes and 21 seconds of a trailer that I have experienced. Oh, man.
Admittedly, I was like, this is a really long trailer for this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That felt like an eternity. Let's listen. We're going to kick things off with good feelings, good vibes, good memories. Casey, I feel like you are probably the most like pro this movie. So Casey, I want to kick things off with you. Casey, do you remember the first time you saw Ready to Rumble and what that, you know, what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, I assume I'm probably the most pro this movie. This is the second podcast I've ever done on Ready to Rumble. Ironically, Charlie has been involved both times. Me and Charlie did a watch along during the pandemic of Ready to Rumble, and that was a lot of fun. Anyway, yeah, the first time I watched this was one of two movies I remember renting from our gas station in town as a kid all the time, and I just found out literally today as I was looking it up. I rented Ready to Rumble and Good Burger all the time. They are directed by the same man, Brian Robbins. So thank you so much for influencing my childhood, Brian Robbins. So when I watched this, obviously 2003 was the first year I became a wrestling fan. That's when I got invested. And I vividly remember like just trying to consume anything wrestling at the time. So like my parents we'd go to garage sales, and anytime they would have old WCW or WWF VHS tapes, I would always pick them up. I would watch Monday Night Raw every single week. So much so that my parents still remind me to this day of, we couldn't leave the house on Monday nights because you had to watch Monday Night Raw for 2 or 3 years. And so when I found out that Ready to Rumble was a thing, I didn't get into wrestling until after WCW was gone. Goldberg was already in WWE at the time. That was kind of my introduction, was seeing Goldberg on TV and being like, who is this monster of a human being? And that's oddly enough how I became a wrestling fan, was because of Big Bill Goldberg. And so when I watched Ready to Rumble, the thing that I connected with the most, I didn't remember anything about David Arquette or Scott Kahn in this movie. It was the triple cage at the end. And that fascinated me as a kid, of like, oh my God, that's incredible. I want to see that in WWE. I know we have like Hell in a Cell and Steel Cage and Elimination Chamber, but I need to see that triple cage match. Still have not gotten that in WWE. Triple H, I'm looking at you. You brought back War Games. Why not bring back the Ready to Rumble triple cage match?
I can give you some reasons, but
I can't think of any reasons why you wouldn't. And then you have David Arquette can do like the hype package beforehand. It would be incredible. That was my first introduction to Ready to Rumble, just falling in love with the finale, I guess, of this movie, the triple cage match.
Yeah. I won't say anything yet. I will refrain from offering, but no, this is actually positive, but I still will refrain from saying anything. Charlie, how about you? Do you remember the first time that you saw Ready to Rumble?
I do not remember the first time that I watched Ready to Rumble. Primarily just because I think I probably watched it sometime in that, you know, in the year that it came out. And I was kind of the opposite. You know, Anthony had mentioned earlier that he was a big WCW guy for a long time. And I always watched WCW, but I was always a WWE guy. And that was even during, you know, during like the new generation stuff that we mentioned earlier. So I really don't recall my first time watching this, just because I was probably watching Raw at the time that this was starting to become a thing, and probably watched it and didn't think much of it. And you know, the movie still makes me giggle because I'm a child, and there are things like poop jokes are still funny to me, and it could be the fact that my child yelled at me for a solid 2.5 hours that I just want to laugh here today. So there is also that going on, but I don't recall. I do recall my most memorable time watching this movie. I think the times that I've been on the show, I've mentioned my friend Tyson a number of times. Now Tyson's an old wrestling buddy. We've been to millions, that's an exaggeration, but we've been to a lot of shows together. One show, we went to a doubleheader in Minneapolis for Wrestlepalooza. They did two nights, and we went to the first night, stayed in a hotel. The second day, when we were killing time, the bar arcade that sponsored Wrestlepalooza, it was in Uptown Minneapolis. It's called the Uptown Bar, and it's a really cool barcade there. Since they were sponsoring it, and David Arquette happened to be on the show that night, they showed Ready to Rumble on their giant projector screen. And the reason this is so memorable is because Tyson, who was sitting at the bar the entire time I was going around playing video games, proceeded to get wildly drunk off of straight up Jameson on the rocks. And he quoted that movie drunk out of his mind for the next hour and 28 minutes in front of the entire bar. And it is still one of my favorite memories of Tyson, because he did not give a shit and still does not give a shit what people think about him and that scenario. But that weekend we actually did get to meet David Arquette, and he had that cool little resurgence in pro wrestling and did the documentary. Really improved his own mental health from coming back into wrestling and doing that. Coincidentally, almost died in the meantime, but it was a really cool, it was a really good documentary, and honestly, a very cool story that he came back to wrestling to get kind of make a name for himself and prove that he could do it. And he did a great job on the independent scene during that time.
Yeah, I will say that You Can't Kill David Arquette is the best thing to come out of this movie. That is a very, very worthy thing to have, because that documentary is fantastic. Just on all of the things that it covers, I think it's great. And we probably wouldn't have it if it weren't for this movie.
Oh, there it is. There it is. There it is.
Anthony, save me. What are your positive memories of, maybe, you know, if you can't remember the first time you've seen it, but maybe the kind of repeated viewings on Ready to Rumble, what were your, you know, initial thoughts on this thing?
So, like I said, I think by the time the movie came out, for sure by the time it came out on VHS, I was not watching WCW. I have revisited a lot of episodes of Nitro and old pay-per-views of WCW's from this era, and I have no recollection of them. And I do have a lot of recollection of stuff that was happening in 98 and 99. So, I feel fairly confident that I was done with WCW by the time this movie came out, but I was a big Sting fan. Obviously that was the reason I came back to being a fan, although for some reason it hasn't driven me to AEW and never drew me to TNA either, but that's another story, yeah. I guess. But so I think, yeah, I do remember him, David Arquette, winning the WCW title because of this movie. And I must have watched this movie a ton of times on VHS, and I think it was on HBO a lot around that time as well, that when it came out. So I have a lot of memories just watching it with my buddy Carter, who I mentioned earlier, who had the N64 game, and my friend Shane used to do the Sal Bandini wanna wrestle quote all the time. So I don't know that I have any specific memories of it, but it's one that I probably have only watched twice since like the mid 2000s, maybe yeah. Three times. And this would have been the third time, was when I watched it last week. So, but I definitely for sure watched it more than 10 times on VHS throughout the 2000, at least through between mid 2000 and like 2005.
That's, you know, I would say that three times is pretty impressive, because I do believe that watching this last week is the second time I have ever seen this movie. The first time was at the movie theater in Plano, Texas, opening weekend, where I went to see this with my WCW fan friends. I was a WWE guy. Loved WWE, and they were constantly telling me how much better WCW is than WWF, WWE, just talking about how great all of these people were.
Yeah, jokes like that.
You get to go to the, yeah, I know, right? You get to go
were
to
your
the
friends
movie
huge Sean Stasiak fans or what?
Yeah, they actually did like Sean Stasiak. Who was the one with the long hair? Who eventually went to WWE like during the invasion angle?
Chuck Palumbo.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. They liked him a lot too. and surprisingly, like
the big Laparca guys or
Prince Iakea, big Prince Iakea fans.
There is one on this call right now. Thank you.
That's
I think
fair.
I think by this point he was the artist formerly known as Prince Iakea.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. Probably sounds right.
Funny story, yes, is that Prince Iakea did a six-man tag match in WWF at the Royal Rumble in 97. So,
wow. Yeah. Was that his, what was his wrestling name? Was it still Prince Iakea?
I can't remember now. Now it's gonna baffle me. I just remember looking at it and being like, "Oh, that's Prince Iakea! Oh my god!"
Yeah,
yeah. He was
now
in
I
that.
Have to go back and watch.
There was a AAA six man tag match, actually, and I don't mean to like off rail us, but funniest thing about that match was that somebody did a dive out to the ring, landed on their feet. His partner walked into the ring. They tagged, and the referee counted it legal.
Oh, wrestling.
Yeah, it made sense.
It's always perfect. It's always perfect. But no, like the big thing was like, oh, Goldberg's in this movie. You got to go with us so you can see Goldberg. You like wrestling. So I did. I went, I saw this movie in theaters. It was the Cinemark Theater in Plano, Texas. It was a great theater that's kind of like where I saw a lot of really wonderful movies. And I also saw Ready to Rumble there. And yeah, I think it's fair to say that I did not like this movie right from the get-go. It wasn't even the wrestling aspect of it. It was the comedy, which I know Charlie is very high on. But for me, the comedy.
I might be lacking sleep a little bit too. I'm not always very high on this movie, but it's like watching that trailer today. I was like, that's exactly what I needed.
Oh man, for me the comedy was just I was almost upset with watching the movie. And I, you know, when you have such a visceral reaction, you want to go back, try it again. And I thought that 23 years was ample time for me to kind of get past my problems with Ready to Rumble. Yeah, it's not the case. Not the case. But I'm curious for you guys. So this was something that you all at one point or another had a fondness for, be it, you know, just out of the silliness of it all, or even just kind of like that connection to professional wrestling. So maybe going through it again, this time through, how did Ready to Rumble land for you? Casey, did I start with you last? I started with you last time, Casey. So I'm going to start with Charlie on this one. What were your kind of thoughts on this movie now watching it this time through? Did you have kind of that gut vomit reaction? Or did you have like a, oh yeah, this is fine. This is still totally average.
You know, okay, so this was, I think... I'm going to reference back to when Casey and I did that watch along over the pandemic, and we had a lot of fun doing that. I know at one time we took some time and talked about what was actually going on in WCW at the time. Yeah. I now, like, this past summer, I finally got a chance to read this book just called Nitro by Guy Evans.
Great and book. It's,
yeah. Did you read it, Anthony?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote it. I read it on a long road trip last spring.
Did really you? Good. Okay. So we read it like you read it this last spring and I did it this last summer. So we're like very, very close in time there. I thought the book was excellent. So watching it this time around after reading that book, and you know, there's another book out called just called the Death of WCW, which has some good information in it, but it's just not as well written as Guy Evans' book Nitro is. So I, watching it now with some of the knowledge and some of the people that they interviewed during this, and kind of recalling some of the things from the book, and just remembering that, oh, in fact, David Arquette did win the WCW heavyweight championship. You know, he in fact won Harley Race's title belt. and what had to happen in order to make that happen, and the stuff that they were doing in order to make this movie successful. Now, you look at this movie and you just look at it from the movie perspective without the popularity of professional wrestling at the time and their ability to market this movie, this is a grade A flop of a movie. This movie has been successful off of the sheer success of what the late 90s did for professional wrestling. Now, I mean, but watching it this time around, I had a lot of fun. It's just, at this point, it just kind of... You're in a time machine at that point. You become a 13 year old boy, old boy, when you're watching it, and like the rules of never get near the ring when there's a ladder match going on, and then somebody gets hit. Like, it's just slapstick stuff. Like, it. I'm not asking when I'm watching Ready to Rumble. I'm watching it for a completely different reason than why I'm watching Shawshank. So there's and there's no comparison for those movies. I just want to shut my mind off and and get in my time machine and be 13 years old for an hour and a half again.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Anthony, how about for you? How about this time around? How did this rewatch go for you?
So I somewhat agree with Charlie about the ability to go back and kind of relive that time in your life. And partially this movie did do that for me as well. There is a nostalgia factor of, you know, watching this however many times when I was 12 and 13. And, you know, there was that part of it. But there is, like, in the second, like, the middle and final thirds, there's at least 10 to 15 minutes of just too much stuff. Like, stuff that could have been cut, and the movie would have been perfectly fine. I will say, things that I came away with that are positive, I thought it had a absolutely killer cast outside of the wrestlers. I mean, Bill Goldberg, obviously, but but like Arquette is great. Khan, they're having fun with it. Oliver Platt seems to be having a blast to me. Yeah. You know, you got Joey Pants, you've got Rose McGowan. Like the cast for the time is fantastic. And John Landau as Sal Bandini, of course. So like
it's too hard, yes.
it's a killer cast. And it does give me that nostalgia factor, but I'm very confused on the flip side of it by what the hell they were trying to do with this movie. because like the main characters are total just losers. And like, why is WCW produced this movie? Why are they making their fans look like idiots and losers and virgins and all of these other things? And
in their defense, I was all of those things.
Right. No, here's the thing.
That was the movie.
Probably just surprisingly on brand maybe for what they thought about their fans, but also like, why are they doing that? If they're trying to, you know, market this movie, presumably to wrestling fans, why are they like exposing the business in the first third by basically being like, calling spots in the ring and stuff, which like up to that point, like WCW was starting to go in that direction with Russo coming in. And I know that it got really, really weird there at the end with them being like, Goldberg's not following the script this week and all of that. But like up to that point, to my knowledge, like you'd never had anything like that where you were showing calling spots in the ring and, you know, like having freaking Joey Pants tell Jimmy King that like he's going to win tonight. And then, like, you know, have everybody attack him so he had to lose, but then making the final match seem as if wrestling is real.
There's just a
lot of really strange choices. So those were the things that stuck out to me, the positives and negatives that I guess stood out this watch.
There's actually an alternate ending to this movie that makes that somewhat make sense.
Is there an alternate ending to this movie?
I actually am familiar with this, but Casey, please take it away because you'll know more than I do.
I mean, it's basically that at the end, it's revealed that DDP and Jimmy King are in on this together, and it was all a work, bro.
Oh.
And that should just be the ending. Instead, it's like, no, let's have a shoot triple cage match that doesn't make any sense in terms of what you set up in the first act of this movie. Yeah, I don't know why the choices that WCW, Warner Brothers, whoever was actually in charge of, like, hey, let's make a WCW movie, but our fans are stupid redneck sewage workers who are virgins who couldn't get a girl to save their lives and are dumb and don't know the business. And those are our main characters. Let's root for them. And then let's have, you know, DDP, who is like the baby face of WCW, be the heel in this movie. Even into, like, for us wrestling fans, it's like we pay attention to that stuff. I think to any ordinary person who's like, I don't know, let's go watch this David Arquette comedy in theaters, whatever, fine, sure. They probably have no idea who, like, Diamond Dallas Page or Goldberg or Sting are. So a lot of that stuff probably goes over their head anyway. But for us, the target audience, you would assume for this movie, it's like, why is DDP the bad guy in this movie? Why is kayfabe in reality just intertwined somehow in this movie, but neither one makes any bit of sense? Why is Disco Inferno with Goldberg? He would never hang out with him. No one likes Disco Inferno. Come on.
No one is going to cheer for Disco Inferno. I don't care if he's aligned with Goldberg. I don't care. Disco Inferno sucks. Just get him out of there. Get him out of there.
I love Disco Inferno.
Oh no. Oh, stop it.
You the man was not. Over. The man was over. He was.
Fandango did it better.
Who was the other guy?
Disco Alex, Inferno walked so Alex Fandango
Wright,
can
Alex
run.
Wright ruled.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy.
That's Wunderkind?
He took Disco Inferno's gimmick and made it better.
Agree.
I don't disagree with that. Alex Wright still trains people in Germany.
Good.
To this day.
Good. I'm glad he's still working. He deserves it.
He looks nothing like his former self.
Casey, you kind of ran with the WCW aspect of this and how it just is completely bonkers and doesn't make any sense. But I'm curious. So rewatching it this time through, you did say at the beginning that this is still has a nostalgic factor for you and is still a solid 3-star movie. So I'm guessing that your rewatch of this movie was okay.
Yeah, okay. This is, I mean, even as a kid, this has perpetually been a 3-star movie. It's never going to go higher. It's never going to go any lower. It's like, I like Ready to Rumble. Like, it's not great. In my opinion, it's still probably the second best until we watch the new Iron Claw movie. In my opinion, I think it's the second best wrestling-themed movie out there behind The Wrestler.
I don't know if we have any other options.
There's other options. Come on, no holds barred.
WrestleManiac.
WrestleManiac. Wrestlers versus Zombies. You have the Page movie. Fighting with my family.
That one.
Ready to Rumble is better than that one.
I didn't see any other films that she did.
Charlie, what do you mean by that?
You're referring to the one she did with The Miz, correct?
Yeah. Bounty Hunter 4, Electric Boogaloo.
Sure.
Co-starring Xavier Woods.
The Ghost of Marines Past.
Ready to Rumble, like, it's fine. It's always going to stay at this 3-star movie for me. I'll admit, I was watching this on VHS, as every WCW movie should be watched. It's on VHS. And while watching it, I found myself like doing things in my office and sort of half paying attention. And that's how I feel I probably watched it as a kid, of like, I'm going to have this on my TV. I'll look up, I'll watch when like Goldberg and Diamond Dallas Page are on screen. And then I'll go back down to play with my wrestlers. And when the final cage match comes up, I'll watch that in its entirety. And then I'll rewind it and do it all again while I play with my wrestling action figures. Like, that's how I feel like I'm going to always watch this movie. Not that I'm going to play with my wrestling action figures every time, but maybe I'm going to find myself doing some other stuff and then popping up to watch the bits that I like.
Yeah. I did not watch the movie that way because I didn't want there to be any like fuel to say, well, Andy, you didn't even pay attention. No, I paid attention to this movie. I watched all 1 hour and 47 minutes of this movie. This movie is closer to 2 hours than it is an hour and a half. Like, come on. This movie needs to be a crisp 83 minutes tops. Like, you know, the hour and 47 minutes. What are we doing? I will say this. So I do want to say something complimentary about this movie. And that is the fact that once they get to the wrestling match at the end of the movie, fantastic. Like, just, it's so exciting, but that's because I'm a pro wrestling fan. And it's like you get all these people in this match, and like it's put together well and staged well. Like it was a lot of fun to watch the match. The problem is that you have to get through the entire rest of the movie to get to that point. And where you get to see like Sid Vicious and Perry Saturn act as like murderous henchmen who beat up an old man. You get like
that's one of my favorite scenes of this movie.
God. It's kind of toying with that idea.
The things that work the most is when the wrestlers do, like when it's the wrestlers are like characters in this movie. I'm like, I love the fact because, again, as a wrestling fan, I love the fact that there's a movie where Perry Saturn and Sid Vicious are henchmen.
Yeah.
Going after an 80-year-old man and trying to attack him, and they get beat up in slapstick comedy fashion. That's hilarious to me.
It's like a Looney Tunes cartoon. Like, exactly. I think that's part of what this movie is trying to do. Or, you know, I mean, at least that's what the execution comes across as. I don't know exactly what this movie was trying to do. Like, if it wanted to be a sincere, like, love letter to professional wrestling, it's not.
Definitely wasn't to their fans.
Yeah, not to their fans. Oh, God. But yeah, I just like I've got the Wikipedia up for this movie, just kind of reading through it, and it's like everything is coming back to me from my recent rewatch, and I'm just like, oh God, that's right, that happened. Oh, that happened. Oh God. So I feel like with you guys, I can be a little bit more like, you know, oh. You know, this movie is not, you know, like I would with everybody else. I'd be like, oh, this movie's not for me, but I appreciate that you guys like it. No, this movie sucks. really, really don't like this movie. But, you know, like I said, there's something good about it. And that's that wrestling match at the end. I thought that was a ton of fun to watch. I guess I'm curious then to keep the conversation going here, because we'll wrap up in like 10 minutes or so, but I think to kind of keep the conversation going for now, what are kind of like the standout, be it sequences or standout like performances? Anthony, I'll pose this question to you first. Like, what are the moments in this movie that kind of like, if they don't make it so it's like long term, and so it doesn't make it so it's like a great movie, but what are the moments that kind of make it so it's something special to you?
Oh man, that's a great question, because you know, I watched this movie last week, so like already a lot of the scenes have kind of faded from my memory, which probably is not a very complimentary thing to say. I think it's just the fact that there's all of this, like all these wrestlers that from when I was growing up that are in it, and seeing them, you know, Goldberg is pretty clunky. I think outside of Diamond Dallas Page, he probably has the most lines. But like you guys said, like the Sid Vicious and Perry Saturn is a lot of fun. I mean, I love Sal Bandini, obviously. I really liked Caroline Ray's cameo as as Jimmy King's ex-wife. But I'm really, I guess, struggling to think of any scenes that stand out.
Sure.
I guess I think it's really interesting that the movie takes place in Wyoming, of all places. Like
a state with no wrestling promotion themselves at
right,
all.
Like, I have to think, like, WCW must have run a show there at some point in the same way that, like, they ran in the Sioux Falls Arena back in the day, even though that was like a dump even then. And so they must have just been hitting, you know, all 50 states, or at least the contiguous 48. But it's,
I'm
just
sure they
odd.
Had a Monday Night Nitro after Hog Wild and Sturgis or something. That's probably the next route after that.
They did in Rapid, I think, at least once. But that was probably an annual thing that they probably just had in Rapid the next day. But it's still just weird that they would choose Wyoming. And I don't even remember what town. Did they say it was Cheyenne that they had the Nitro in?
Isn't that the only city in Wyoming?
More or less. I haven't spent a lot of time in Wyoming, so I guess. But I will say one thing that stood out watching it this time that it kind of surprised me, because Grain Belt is my brand when it comes to beer, and seeing all the Grain Belt product placement was very surprising, because as a Grain Belt drinker, and I know that things are maybe different now than they were 23 years ago, but you really can't get Grain Belt outside of like pretty much the states that border Minnesota. Like, I've been in Missouri and not been able to get a hold of it. So the idea that it was available in Wyoming and then later on in Atlanta, that really stood out to me. But I did love that there was Grain Belt product placement. So shout out to Grain Belt.
I never thought about it. Like, the product placement in this movie.
I only noticed it because I'm a Grain Belt guy, and I just happened to be like, hold on. That bottle looks slightly familiar.
It's amazing.
Yeah, otherwise I probably never would have caught it.
You know what? I did the same thing that Casey did. I had it on in the background, and then something would pop up, and I'd be like, oh yeah, that happened. Okay, yeah, that happened. All right, there it is.
So. Yeah, I got distracted by my phone a little bit more than I'd like to admit, because I was like, I got to be a good podcast guest, got to pay attention to this, but it gets a little laggy there around the like one hour and 10 minute mark.
It does.
It's the part when Oliver Platt, for no reason, like falls down to a what is that called? Oh my God. Like a sewer.
Oh yeah. The manhole,
the manhole cover. Like, he just falls down it for no reason. Like, next scene, he's fine. I'm like, what are we doing here? Why is this in this movie?
The fact that they were able to talk Oliver Platt into doing this movie is still one of my favorite things about it, though.
I mean, the fact that they got any nameable person to do this movie is bizarre to me. Like, Rose McGowan was a pretty big deal in 2000. How did they get her on board?
Well, and so was David Arquette at the same time. Yeah. I mean, he had just done Scream and Scream 2, and he was on a hot streak there for a minute, and I think he was for a while there were a lot of people who thought he might make the leap into more serious things, and then he kind of got typecast as Dewey.
So Charlie, then for you, I guess, what is it that kind of stands out about this movie? Like, just what is it? I mean, I guess I would imagine for you, because of your wrestling background, that there is, it's the wrestling, but what is it that really kind of stands out to make this so it's not just your normal, average, run-of-the-mill potty comedy?
Oh, nothing. On that end. Absolutely nothing. For me, this whole movie gets sold by the fact that it's, that everything's building, you know, they're building to the triple cage, which I'll go on record. That triple cage is an awful, awful idea. I know Casey wants that triple cage so much. That is such a bad idea. It is such a bad.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it is hell in a cell on top. Oh, and on top of that, they put another cage, and on top of that, it's just a shark cage. Like, there's nothing stable about what's going on in that whole thing. And then they actually did that match in WCW. And
yes, they did. And I was there when it was in Dallas, Texas. At Nitro.
You were not. You were at that show?
I was there. Was there.
Oh, so you got to watch the Jeff Jarrett, Diamond Dallas Page, David Arquette triple cage match.
Yeah, and I remember like nothing about it. Oh. Like, I just remember being there and like knowing that I was there for Nitro, and then knowing that they had the three cages. Kevin Nash was there. That's it. That's all I remember. Was just this, that I because my friend who liked WCW so much had an extra ticket, and he was able to, like, I was able to go with him. And I remember the three cages. I remember Kevin Nash, and that it was shockingly empty for a live televised wrestling event. So
Well, and that's, I mean, I would really recommend, I was hoping that we could get more into the information from that book, because I've really been gushing about it over the last, like, 6 months. But, like, that was such an interesting time for WCW business-wise, because really, like, they could not get anyone to sponsor their events. And because they couldn't get people to sponsor their events, they just started hemorrhaging money. But since they were hemorrhaging money, they started relying on people like Vince Russo to come up with some kind of brilliant scheme, like a triple fucking cage. And so it just doesn't, that whole triple cage thing, it's just such... It's so dangerous. Like, I still cringe when we just do cage matches, because I know these people and I know how dangerous it actually is. But, you know, I also understand from the visual aspect, we always have to up the ante. But anyway, that triple cage, building up to that, for me, it's Sting. I was a WWE guy, but Sting was always one of my guys. Like, I always watched WCW because it was Sting. Like, that's when they built up to introduce Sting into the movie. That's why I watched that entire movie in the first place. And it doesn't matter. Whenever I see that scene in Ready to Rumble, I'm a child again. And I'm a fan of Sting, and I will be a fan of Sting until the day I die.
Yeah, yeah. Would you be more comfortable with a double cage, Charlie? Like, just a cage?
I wouldn't
on top
be
of
comfortable with a double cage. No, I would not. When you say double cage, are we talking like Kennel from Hell?
Chubby Prison is what we're looking at.
Ooh.
I just want cage on top of cage. Like, just take out that third, the shark cage, and then, you know, have those two. Or Elimination Chamber on top of a cage. So it's like, you know, you got the ground cage and then Elimination Chamber on top.
I still maintain that the Punjabi prison match, if it was just strictly an escape rule and there was nothing else to it, people would love that match. But no.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Casey, how about for you? Yeah. I like coming back to you, because I know that me in particular, I'm certainly way negative on this movie, but I like being able to come back to you, because I feel like Anthony and Charlie are kind of that middle ground, and then you are very positive on this. So what for you kind of makes this stand out as something that is special, outside of your regular, like I said with Charlie, your regular kind of potty comedy?
How many wrestling potty comedies do you get? Get one, and it's Ready to Rumble. That's what we got for us, Adam Sandler potty humor fans. This is what we got, Ready to Rumble. And I think that's what, I don't know if the potty humor in this movie, there's a lot of it, and it's kind of just generic. Like, you could see this type of humor in any other comedy around that time, especially in the early 2000s. Like, it feels very of the time. And the thing that makes it at least stand out for me is the wrestling part, is when they kind of combine the two and have, like, the goofy humor of this movie combined with professional wrestling. Like, two of my favorite lines were actually shown in the trailer, and they're during wrestling scenes in this. Obviously, David Arquette's "Wrestling's Not Fake" freak out at the beginning of the movie is... now iconic, maybe the most iconic line of the movie, that's for sure. Another line that I love from Arquette is when Jimmy King gets swerved, bro, and he loses the title to DDP, and they're like trying to bum rush the ring, and Arquette yells, "It's not even a pay-per-view." I'm like, that's a great line that only wrestling fans are going to understand. Like, why would any other person care that it's not a pay-per-view? What is a pay-per-view? We only know that because of professional wrestling. We know that title changes usually don't happen on WCW Monday Nitro, unless you're WCW in the year 2000. Then it just
that year there were a lot of
like
them.
Three times on every Nitro episode.
Yep.
But my favorite line of the movie is one that only wrestling fans are going to get. And it's from Scott Kahn at the end, where for some reason, I brought this up earlier, of bad gimmicks that go with King gimmick. He's a pimp who's with Jimmy the King, and then David Arquette is a sheriff with Jimmy King. And it doesn't make any sense. Why is a sheriff, a pimp, and a king all hanging out? Why are they in the same stable together? Get some cohesion here, Vince Russo. Anyway, he has my favorite line at the end of this movie, where he does the DDP diamond cutter hand gesture to DDP and flips it upside down and says, "Diamond upside down is a pussy," and runs away. I'm like, only wrestling fans are going to think that's funny, because they're the only ones that are going to understand that direct joke towards Diamond Dallas Page. It's the best line of the movie. It's the reason I also love that cage match at the end. I'm waiting, always waiting for that line.
Oh, man.
Also, John Cena's in this movie, by the way. I just
he is.
That's before we end. That's what I hear. I'll have to go back and watch that to watch the gym scene so that I can see John Cena.
Is or is not Samoa Joe as well?
Oh,
he
I don't know.
Is probably there, but Cena is literally the only extra you can see in that scene.
I will say that for me, like, the thing that really stands out about this movie, you guys kind of touched on a little bit too, outside of the wrestling, Oliver Platt does look like he's having a really good time. I really enjoy him, like, trying to have a good time in this movie. So that's a lot of fun. I hate to kind of cut the conversation short, but I have a dog who's kind of on the fritz. So we'll start kind of winding things down here. I guess for you guys, what's kind of your last word, your last kind of takeaway on Ready to Rumble?
I'll start here. I guess for the takeaway, when it comes to this movie, if you're a fan of pro wrestling, it's a must watch. If you're in the mood for just Looney Tunes slapsticky humor, you should really watch this movie and turn your mind off. Now, if you also are a fan of making fun of Stu Hart, you should watch this movie. So I would definitely I would recommend it for those three reasons.
I like getting to poke at Stu Hart a little bit.
It's a real good time. It really is.
Yeah.
Who just gets their jollies off beating up people younger than them? It's Stu Hart. Stu Hart. He owns a bear. It's fine.
Anthony, how about you?
I guess my final thoughts are, if you were 12 or 13 years old when this movie came out and have an idea about WCW, then it's a fantastic movie to have watched, especially if you watched it in 2000. There's a lot of confusing choices. As I mentioned before, you've got the weirdo main characters, hard to tell if we're supposed to cheer for them or feel sorry for them or be embarrassed for them or what. But there's a lot of fun wrestler cameos. We haven't even mentioned the Macho Man Randy Savage cameo at the beginning, which I want to just touch on for a second because I love him. It's hard to tell if... Sorry, I don't want to go on a tangent here, but do you guys think that Joe Pantoliano's character was supposed to be Native American? Because there was some, like, weirdly Native American-seeming vibes about him. Like, he had the hair, and, like, sometimes it was braided and was always wearing, like... things
or
like
a weird jewelry. Cultural appropriation.
Yeah. Remember when Eric Bischoff always wore like karate garbs on TV? I feel that's what they're doing here.
I always thought that there was whoever was like the wrestling liaison in there, this was supposed to be them making fun of somebody such as like a Jim Ross or somebody else. I don't know who, because it could have been, it could have been a multitude of different people from the past, but I've never been able to pinpoint it, or if it was supposed to be kind of a callback to those sleazy Southern bookers that wrestling fans will read and hear about until the end of time or until Bret Hart dies. So that's kind of where I'm at with his character.
That totally makes sense. There's a lot of weird choices made in this movie, but yeah, if you were a wrestling fan, especially if you were watching WCW in the late 90s and early 2000s, and even if you were, if you're a wrestling fan and you are interested in the history of wrestling, I think this is worth watching, but especially if you were watching WCW in those years, because there's so many super fun cameos to me. Like I said, Macho Man, you got South Dakota Zone, Mean Gene Okerlund, You know, Bam Bam Bigelow is in there, DDP, you know, all those guys. So to me, having those guys in a movie, Perry Saturn and Sid Vicious being weirdo, henchmen, it's fun. It's
not far off from who they are in real life.
Right. it's fun for a certain type of person, and I am that certain type of person. It is right in my IQ zone.
Casey, fire away. What's your final thoughts on Ready to Rumble?
In the world of professional wrestling, everything matters. And in this case, Ready to Rumble matters. It matters because of what happened in real life because of this movie. David Arquette winning the World Heavyweight Championship being one of those things. Then we get, like we've talked about, the amazing documentary after this, which I think is like a perfect follow-up to Ready to Rumble. The documentary, You Can't Kill David Arquette. I think that's just perfect. I mean, we can tie Nick Gage almost killing David Arquette in real life back to Ready to Rumble. What other story can you tell besides that? I think that's the amazing world of professional wrestling, is that, again, everything matters, everything counts, and there's no other movie like Ready to Rumble, and I think it's an important one for professional wrestling history, for good and mostly for bad, but it's an important part of that history, and we at least, I think in the end, get a redemption arc for this, and that's something only professional wrestling can provide, is this sort of redemption arc for David Arquette.
And I would 100% really cool. Recommend that if you have not read that Guy Evans book, that you guys need to read that Guy Evans book. I thought that was, I would 100% recommend that you guys do that at some point.
Awesome. Yeah, I will definitely check that out. And two, on that same token, if you have not watched the You Can't Kill David Arquette documentary, for any listeners, that is fantastic. Highly recommended. My final thoughts on Ready to Rumble are that this movie's not leaving the naughty list. But, you know, it has, like, the whole thing with David Arquette to come out of it has turned out to be a definite positive. And that wrestling match at the end is great. Unsafe triple cage, you, be damned. I still had
a you saw it live and you don't remember it. Are you sure it was great?
Well, listen, in the movie it's great, in real life maybe not so much. That's a good point. That's a really good point. Like, I'm starting to question that memory. Was I there for that? But no, I went back and I looked on, like, there's some website where you can check different events, and I even think it's on, like, the network where you can go back and watch, like, the Nitro. Mm-hmm. And I think the one that Triple Cage was at Dallas. I was there. But I remember nothing. So maybe I should just keep watching that Nitro episode, just so that my brain can actually pull memories out. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for, joining me for this conversation. I'm sorry that I kind of like have to put an abrupt halt to it. But you know, life is what life is. And I think if there's any movie that we can put an abrupt halt on, listen, I think it's Ready to Rumble. I think we've said all that needs to be said about Ready to Rumble. I do want to pose one last question. So maybe you'll hear my dog howl in the background during this question. But the question is, since it is the Christmas season, what is your favorite Christmas movie of all time? And I'm just going to go left to right across my computer screen. So I'm going to start with Anthony. What is your favorite Christmas movie of all time, and why is it Pearl Harbor?
Man, it is hard to pick just one. Sure. I, like I do with my Christmas music, I almost want to go unconventional with it and say like Eyes Wide Shut or Gremlins, but I think if there is one movie that I absolutely have to watch every year, it's probably It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, great pick.
So I mean it's a boring pick, an obvious pick, but
no,
I mean,
come yeah on. It's fantastic. It's an excellent movie. And Eyes Wide Shut is on my must watch list this season too. I've got to make sure that I get that one watched before the holidays. So good side pick there. Casey, you're up next. Your favorite Christmas movie?
I told you I'm only answering your questions on this episode with wrestling-themed answers, and I'm going to keep that going. We're going to go 2005's Santa's Sleigh, starring Bill
Gunn. Thank you.
Yeah. Enough said.
Excellent choice. If you check out FanFlix, they have on one of their offers this month, Santa's Sleigh is available digitally for $3.99, so you can own that masterpiece forever.
I believe I bought that movie for like $2 from a closed down Hollywood Video. So yeah, that stays on the rotation. Okay.
Even at $3.99, you're pretty much making money on that deal.
Charlie, on to you. What is your favorite Christmas movie?
Ooh, okay. So I will always go with A Christmas Story as my top favorite. Although I will say that the Netflix original Klaus has made it into the yearly rotation the last several years and has had multiple views on a few of these occasions. And I think that is slowly creeping up the list, and I would recommend that to anyone who has not seen it.
I'm a terrible friend, Charlie. You have recommended that movie to me multiple times. I think even last year on your Naughty List episode, you recommended that movie. And I still have not watched it.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Have to do that. Yeah, I think I will too. Guys, thank you again so much for doing this show. Let's wrap up with some plugs. So I'm going to go the opposite way. Charlie, where can people find you online?
On Instagram and on Twitter at WrestlingVoice1. Even though I'm not doing a whole lot of wrestling, I am still hosting the Sioux Falls Stampede in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, the USHL hockey team, where on my social media you can watch me get thwarted in my attempts to drive a Zamboni this season. And then also follow the Sioux Falls Stampede and just kind of pay attention to what's going on with Sioux Falls wrestling. I think I've been told what's been going on, and I don't want to give anything away, but there are going to be some changes here coming up just due to personal reasons. So definitely continue to support local wrestling in Sioux Falls, Omaha, anywhere in Minnesota, up in Fargo. This whole Midwest area is really killing it.
Nice. Casey, how about you? Where can we find you and your podcasts online, or your podcast?
Yeah, you can just follow Screams from the Basement, which is my podcast that I co-host alongside the one and only Sam Lenz. That's where you can find us. We're on every social media platform, and then we drop weekly episodes on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcast. You can find us at Screams from the Basement. And my last plug, whenever you post about something online out there, listeners, please use hashtag Let Charlie Drive the Zamboni.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Good call. Anthony, wrap us up here. Where can people find you online?
Yes, you can find me on the app and website formerly known as Twitter. My handle is @ahookman. I'm currently the ghost of Dangus Jones is my official name, but that's changes every few months at least. You can also find me on Instagram @ahookman. That's AHOEKMAN. And you can find me on TikTok under the same handle. I'm currently doing a series of my favorite albums for every year that I've been alive. I'll do 2005 this week as of the recording, December 12th. So this weekend is like the 15th, somewhere in there. I release them every Saturday afternoon. You can also find my podcast on Twitter. We're currently on indefinite hiatus, mostly because the pandemic is over now and it's harder to get together with my partner who has kids to record. No fault at all, but we finished up Friday Night Lights last October, and we currently have 9 episodes in the can. We're going to start doing a rewatch of the OC. That podcast will be called From Prairie to Pacific, and we are We'll start releasing episodes soon, I hope. Once we have enough in the can that we feel comfortable with, that we can keep up with demand, I guess, as it were.
Yeah.
But as of right now, we are still Reliving the Lights, and that's at Reliving Lights on the website formerly known as Twitter. We'll probably update that handle eventually, but if you're listening to this, it's probably not going to be, unless you're listening to this like 6 months in advance, it'll probably be Reliving Lights for the time being. So, OC podcast coming soon, but for now you can listen to our backlog, wherever you find your podcasts at, Reliving the Lights.
Oh, awesome. I am excited, excited to listen to your OC podcast. I need to go back and listen to some more episodes of Reliving the Lights. I want to do like where I watch in correspondence or like, or in, you know, lined up with those so that I can be like, oh, watch the episode, listen to the episode, mm-hmm. watch an episode, listen to an episode. So I think with the OC, that's going to be my like impetus to get through the entire show. So I'm looking forward to that. You can find Fat Dude Digs Flicks across social media. Just do a search for Fat Dude Digs Flicks. You will find me there, Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd, the website formerly known as Twitter. I like that. I'm gonna keep that because I don't want to call it the other thing. And yeah, just do a search for Fat Dude Digs Flicks. You'll find me there. Subscribe to this podcast, like this podcast, rate and review this podcast, share this podcast with your friends. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Good Pods, anywhere your pods can be caught. If you do subscribe to this podcast, not only do you get Let's Talk About, but you also get the Criterion Break, where I am joined by Blake Ginnethan and Derek Vierink, and we dive into our love for the Criterion Collection proper and the Criterion Channel. We are about to finally wrap up our Wong Kar Wai miniseries with In the Mood for Love and 2046. So keep an ear out because that episode is coming very, very soon. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, please send an email to fatdudedigsflicks@gmail.com. If you want to just have a conversation about movies, if you want to make a recommendation, if you'd like to be on the show, please just send an email to me. I would love to have a conversation with you. Since Casey's here, he has already promoted Screams from the Basement, so I'm not going to do it again. And that's going to do it, I think, for this week's episode. Guys, again, one last time, thank you so much. Thank you for your awesome conversation, but also thank you for, you know, keeping things positive when I was very close to not.
Yes, thank you for having us. And I also want to apologize to the family of Martin Landau. I called him John Landau earlier. Oh, he was, in fact, yeah. Bruce Springsteen's manager. So got my music and my movies mixed up. My apologies to the family of Martin Landau. I know that he is currently no longer with us. So if his family is listening to this, my apologies.
And I also want to apologize to the troops one more time.
And to Disco Inferno.
I'm not doing that. I love the man.
Really quickly, not that anyone was super curious about this, I went back and looked, and I did, in fact, attend the September 4th, 2000 episode of WCW Nitro, and it was Booker T, Jeff Jarrett, Kevin Nash, Sting, Vince Russo. There might be some more people involved as well in the triple cage match. It was the main event of WCW Nitro. No David Arquette there, though, so that must not have been, at least, like I said, I don't remember, and I'm not invested enough to go back and watch the entire episode. But yeah, September 4th, 2000, I was there. See you next time. Bye!
It's been said many times, many ways. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you for listening to Fat Dude Digs Flicks.